the world were like a Sleep Number mattress, everything would adapt for your comfort. Your coffee would never get cold. Your flight would always be on time. And your mattress would always respond to you and your unique sleep needs. Sleep Number mattresses are designed to respond to your body and shift with your changing life, helping you fall asleep faster and stay asleep longer. To experience a whole new world of comfort, visit a Sleep Number store or go to sleepnumber.com. Sleep Number, to a good life's sleep.
What is going on, my fellow campers, and welcome back to the podcast and to our Patreon if you're here for the visual. Tonight's terrifying story is about this man who discovers this abandoned town. I'm assuming it's close to where he lives because he drives there, right? And he finds it based off this like old forum online, like years ago. But he prints out the satellite images. There's only a little bit of information, but he somehow tracks down this location and decides to go on a little adventure. He's done it before, many times in different places, so he must be a pro. Well, he comes across something that outmatches him. What it is and what happens? Stick around, and let's find out. The thread was buried under 4 years of inactivity and 2 pages of spam about a cryptocurrency exchange that had been defunct since 2021. I almost missed it entirely because the original post had been flagged for low effort. No GPS coordinates, directions that assumed you already knew what you were looking for, and photos that had mostly broken into gray error boxes. 3 thumbnails survived. One showed a street sign reading "Baron" in green reflective letters. One showed a pharmacy counter filmed through dusty glass, amber pill bottles still lined up on the shelf behind it. The third was a child's sneaker sitting in the center of a cracked 2-laned road with no caption and no explanation. The username who posted it had made exactly one other contribution to the forum. A question about whether it was legal to enter a condemned property in a state they declined the name and had not logged in since 2019. I know how this sounds already. Guy goes alone into some abandoned town he found on the internet forum and somehow forgets every basic rule of being alive. I brought a Glock, a pry bar, 2 flashlights, and enough common sense to understand that common sense deteriorates the deeper you walk into a place where nobody is supposed to be. The thread had 8 replies. Only 3 from people who claimed any first-hand knowledge of the place. One said the town had been cleared out after a wildfire incident in the early 2000s, and the county had never formally reclassified the land. Another called that a cover story without elaborating. The third post was a single line and never came back. "Don't go at night, and don't make noise. You can't take back." I printed the satellite image on paper because my signal drops in that part of the state, and I have spent enough time in concrete basements and metal-roofed warehouses to know that a phone map is useless the moment you actually need it. I packed the bag the way I always do. Glock with 2 spare magazines in the hip holster. Pry bar clipped to the outside of the bag. 2 flashlights with fresh batteries and a 3rd set loose in the front pocket. Cheap respirator in case of mold or animal waste. Bottled water. Granola bars. Paper map. First aid kit. The first aid kit was a $12 drugstore kit with 4 bandages and a pair of plastic gloves. I want to note that specifically, because it matters later. And I want to be clear that I was already aware of the inadequacy before I put it in the bag. The drive took longer than the satellite image implied. Gravel roads, then a narrower gravel road, then something that had once been paved, but was mostly broken aggregate now, with scrub grass growing through the center strip. My signal dropped to one bar around the third mile marker and disappeared entirely before I found the gate. A rusted cattle gate pulled open and leaning against a fence post, the latch bent back. Someone had been through here recently enough that the hinge still moved. I sat in the car with the engine off for a few minutes. Standard practice at every site. You listen for what is already moving before you add yourself to the noise. The utility poles along the road still had their wires, sagging between them in long arcs, some low enough that I had the ducts slightly getting out. No hum from any of them. Whatever they had been connected to had stopped sending current a long time ago. I parked outside the gate and walked in on foot. The road curved left past a stand of scrub pine, and then Baron was in front of me. Small, flat, and absolutely still in the early afternoon light. The town was smaller than the satellite image suggested because the image had inclined the surrounding lots and what turned out to be a collapsed barn at the edge of the property. Barron itself was maybe two blocks of commercial frontage on a two-lane road with residential streets branching off the back end, and none of it had been touched in the way that felt recent. I'd been in abandoned places before since I was 19. Factories, flood-damaged motels, a decommissioned elementary school in the northern part of the state, where every locker had been left standing open and the gymnasium floor had buckled into a slow wave from water damage over many winters. I know what abandonment looks like when it happens fast versus when it settles in over the years. Baron looked fast. The gas station near the entrance still had its pumps. The card readers were cracked, the price displayed frozen on digits that had not been accurate in decades, but the pumps were still there, connected to the tanks below, still oriented towards vehicles that never came. A Pepsi machine near the station door had been pushed onto its side at some point. The glass panel was unbroken. A Pepsi machine lies on its side for 20 years without breaking its front glass. That detail stayed with me, the way small wrong things do. The diner across the street had a closed back at 2 p.m. sign flipped in the window. Chairs still at the tables inside. Two cups still on the counter at the far end. A paper menu holder still standing between the napkin dispenser and the sugar caddy. The kind of arrangement that takes a different quality when the people who set it up never walked back through the door. A payphone near the diner entrance had its receiver missing, the cord frayed at the end where something had pulled it free. A "now hiring" sign in the laundromat window next door had faded until the letters were barely there, just an impression in yellowed paper. The VHS return slot of a rental store two doors down had a tape halfway through it. The case too swollen from moisture to push in or pull out. An old Ford Taurus sat at the parking area behind the gas station, all four tires flat. The hood rusted through above the engine block. Someone's jack on the passenger seat, dark fabric, collar up. Every door I checked was unlocked. The pharmacy, the hardware store, the laundromat, the diner. No forced entries, no broken glass, no signs of looting. Whatever cleared this town out did not involve people taking what they could carry. I kept my phone out, camera rolling, audio on. I wanted documentation. And I wanted the ambient audio track because a recording picks up things you miss in the moment. I'd learned that from a factory visit where I'd been certain something was moving on that upper level, and the playback showed it had been a HVAC venting the whole time. Main Street held still, weeds through the asphalt, old newspapers flat against the storefront walls, the ink long gone from every page. The municipal building at the far end of the block, brick, three stories, windows intact, functional looking in the specific way that government buildings sustain themselves when everything around them has gone soft. I photographed all of it and kept moving. I stopped at the Radio Shack because the door was already cracked open and the interior was dark enough that I wanted to look before I walked past it. The bell above rang a weak crack and then I pushed in, the mechanism dry and slow. Inside, the pegboard walls still had their hooks, mostly empty, a few holding old packages, battery packs, and plastic shelves with the cardboard browning at the edges, a coaxial cable still in its wrap, a set of cordless phone handsets in a box with a display window cut out so customers could see the color. Cream-colored plastic. Late 90s design. Display cases along the counter, glass on top, sliding locks that no longer slid. Dust on every surface, thick enough to hold footprints. And no footprints already there except mine going in. A price tag gun beside the register. The register drawer open and empty. An employee name tag behind the counter. Steven, in red letters on white. The back wall had posters. Toby Maguire crouched above a city that had gone blue from sun damage. The Spider-Man release date strip still legible along the bottom edge. May 3rd, 2002. Someone had tapped it crooked beside a display rack of portable CD players, and I stood there with my flashlight on it for longer than I needed to, thinking about how strange it would have been to have a town just stop on a date and still keep standing.
You're listening to this podcast, so I know you've got a curious mind. Here's a helpful fact you may not know yet. Drivers who switch and save with Progressive save over $900 on average. Pop over to Progressive.com, answer some questions, and you'll get a quick quote with discounts that are easy to come by. In fact, 99% of their auto customers earn at least one discount. Visit Progressive.com and see if you can enjoy a little cash back. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $946 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2024 and May 2025. Potential savings will vary.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Do you ever think about switching insurance companies to see if you could save some cash? Progressive makes it easy. Just drop in some details about yourself and see if you're eligible to save money when you bundle your home and auto policies. The process only takes minutes, and it could mean hundreds more in your pocket. Visit Progressive.com after this episode to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
The red in the poster had gone pink. The blue had shifted to something close to gray. But the date strip was still sharp. May 3rd, 2002. First weekend of summer. The movie had been everywhere that year. Demo radio sat on the shelf behind the register. Handheld units lined up. One of them sitting slightly forward from the others. The way something gets repositioned when someone had handled it and set it back without paying attention to the line. I picked it up. The battery compartment had corrosion at the contacts. The green bloom of alkaline leakage and two AA batteries partially fused to the housing. I pulled them loose and the unit cracked once. A single burst of static. Short, dense, with a slight rhythmic quality that lasted about 2 seconds before the unit went dead. I stood there holding it. The rhythmic quality could have been interference from old circuitry cycling through a partial discharge. I put the batteries in my bag anyway. Old alkalines sometimes hold a partial charge even when corroded, and I wanted the radio working if I could get it to. I set the unit on the counter and turned to leave. The crying started. Faint, outside, somewhere down the street to the east. I stood at the door of the Radio Shack and listened to it. The cry had the right pitch and the right cadence. Short inhale, longer exhale. The hitching quality of a child who had been at it for a while and is running low. I ran through the options. Foxes can cry in a way that maps uncomfortably close to an infant. Wind through structural damage produces sounds the brain immediately assigns meaning to. Another explorer somewhere in the town pulling something deliberate. The sound could be many things. Then it came again, clearer, and the list of options got harder to hold. I stepped out with the Glock up and tight against my chest. I want to address the people already objecting to that. I know there are individuals who wander into abandoned hospitals with a vape pen and a phone at 9% battery because they believe that being scared is the same as being prepared. I am not one of them. If you are already watching through the screen thinking, get your weapon, then we were briefly on the same page. The crying was coming from somewhere past the diner. I moved along the storefront wall, keeping my back near the brick, checking the angles. I called out once at the intersection, just,
"Hello?"
And immediately regretted it, because that is precisely the kind of noise that tells anything listening where you are without giving you anything in return. The crying paused. Then it started again, and it was coming from a different place. That was the first clearly wrong detail. It had been at the intersection of Main and what the satellite map was labeling Garfield Street. Now it was behind a detached garage set back from a blue house on the residential block to the north. There was no time for a child to cover that distance quietly. The ground between those two points was gravel and dry weeds, and I hadn't heard a thing move. I covered the intersection and angled towards the garage with my back along the fence line. I used the window glass of the blue house as a partial mirror to check the approach before I moved up along the garage wall. The signs started at the corner. Claw marks in the vinyl siding, low and grouped. Four parallel lines dragging downward through the material and into the foam underneath. The trash cans at the back of the property had been pressed flat from outside, bent inward rather than toppled. Black smears along the porch railing, thick and dry. Deer bones under the collapsed section of the carport, picked clean and concentrated in one place, the way they accumulate when something has time to be unhurried. Tufts of pale hide on the fence nails, hairless at the attachment point and rough at the edges, torn rather than cut. I did not touch them. I moved around to the back of the house. The crying was coming from inside. The back door was open, and through the screen I could see into the kitchen. Linoleum, old appliances, a chair on its side. And beyond the kitchen, the entrance to the living room. And in the living room, something large. My first thought was a bear. The shape was right for it. Broad across the back, heavy in the shoulders, the posture is something that carries its weight forward. It was crouched over something on the floor with its back to me, and the pale skin across its spine moved with each breath in a way that registered wrong a full second before I could name why. It was hairless. Entirely hairless across the back, pale in the flat, waxy way that plastic goes after years in direct sun. Patches along the shoulder blades and lower spine had gone raw-looking, friction damage, or something that had been scraped repeatedly against a rough surface. The forelimbs were long, longer than the body proportions called for, and the claws were curved, black, thick at the base where they had grown from a paw. The paw was splayed wide against the floorboards. The ribs tracked under the skin where it inhaled, each one a slow, rigid movement and settling. The crying came from it. Its mouth was barely open. The sound came out structurally correct. The small inhale, the longer exhale, the hitching. But the structure was the whole of it. The crying was shaped right and hollowed at the center, the meaning stripped out, leaving only the form. The creature had learned the architecture of crying without thinking of what makes crying matter. I started backing away, slow, weight distributed across each step so the floor didn't register it all at once. I stepped on glass. The creature stopped crying. A full second of nothing. Then its head turned, past where a head is engineered the turn on that kind of neck, until the small wet eye on the left side of its face was oriented towards the back door. The black nose was split with old scarring. The gums were visible beneath the upper lip because the lip had been damaged at some point and healed badly, pulling back from the teeth. Hello? My voice. The exact pitch. The exact small uncertainty I had put into it at the intersection. Replayed through a mouth that did not move the way a mouth moves when a person forms words. I fired once when it came through the doorframe. The round hit the shoulder. I saw the flinch, and the creature kept moving. I ran towards Main Street because I knew the layout and because the creature was faster in open ground. I had covered the residential block on the way in and knew the angles. The alley behind the diner, the gap between the hardware store and the pharmacy, the side entrance at the laundromat. The creature hit the Taurus hard enough to shift it on its flat tires. I heard the scrape of the wheel wells on asphalt and then the impact against the driver's door. And I did not look back because looking back costs you a step you need. I fired again at the corner of Main Street and Garfield, moving shot at a moving target, and the round hit the telephone pole behind where it had been. The wood splintered, the pole was rotted through, and I kept going. The diner door was unlocked. I went through it at speed and got behind the counter in three steps, and the creature hit the front door hard enough to bow the frame inward. The plate glass fixed without breaking. It was old and thick, but the frame separated from the brick casting on the right side and opened a gap. I could hear it working at the door, steady pressure, evenly applied, unhurried. I went through the kitchen. Old commercial equipment, stainless steel surfaces worn through at the high traffic areas. A walk-in cooler with the door wedged open, and the smell coming out of it concentrated and dark. A rack of old fryer baskets came down loud when I caught it going past, aluminum on tile, and the creature at the front door paused and then hit it again. The rear exit opened into an alley. I came out moving left, towards the back of the pharmacy, and the creature came out over the roofline of the diner. I heard the landing before I saw it. The impact of something heavy, claws on asphalt. And then, it was in the alley behind me. It was imitating the Radio Shack bell. That was what I heard for the first several seconds. The dry, slow clack of the entrance bell repeating on a 2-second interval while it closed the distance. Then the clack became the child crying. And the crying shifted to my own, "Hello?" in my own voice. And I understood what the forum post had meant. Don't make noise you can't take back. Every sound I'd made since entering Baron was now in its inventory. I cut my hand through the gap in the pharmacy's side fence, a rusted nail catching the heel of my palm and dragged. I registered it as pressure and kept moving. My keys were beating against my thigh with every step, and the creature repeated that sound too, the small metallic rhythm of them, in between the child crying and my voice saying hello, and the Radio Shack bell cycling through again. The municipal building was at the end of the block. Brick, three stories, windows intact on the upper floors and the smaller ones on the bottom level. I ran for it.
You're listening to this podcast, so I know you've got a curious mind. Here's a helpful fact you may not know yet. Drivers who switch and save with Progressive save over $900 on average. Pop over to Progressive.com, answer some questions, and you'll get a quick quote with discounts that are easy to come by. In fact, 99% of their auto customers earn at least one discount. Visit Progressive.com and see if you can enjoy a little cash back. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $946 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2024 and May 2025. Potential savings will vary.
The front doors opened. I got inside and put my back to the wall beside the entrance and listened. The lobby was government functional. Dropped ceilings, linoleum, a reception desk at a low partition, a corkboard still pinned with notes that I couldn't read in the low light. Stairwell at the back left. A hallway going right towards what the layout implied was a records room. I dragged a filing cabinet from behind the reception desk across the floor and wedged it against the front doors. The cabinet was heavy, and the dragging was loud, and the whole time I was doing it, I was listening for claws on brick. The doors held. I went for the stairs. My hands were shaking by the time I reached the first landing. I fumbled the reload. In one round, bounced off the stair railing and fell through the gap between the stairs and the wall. I heard it hit the basement concrete a long time after it had left my hand. I crouched on the landing and tried to pick up the round I had dropped on the step, and the blood from my palm was getting onto everything, and my fingers were not closing the way they should, and I could hear the front doors getting pressure from outside. Slow, patient pressure. The frame ticking in small increments, and I was down there on one knee trying to get a single cartridge off the step with two fingers that weren't working correctly while everything below me moved closer. I left the round and kept going. The second floor was a long hallway with office doors on both sides, most of them open. A council chamber at the far end with its door wedged shut. I went for the stairwell to the third floor and made it halfway up when the filing cabinet in the lobby went over. I heard the front doors open and the creature move through the space below, claws on linoleum, steady and deliberate, and then the child crying softly, the way a child cries when it has gone past the loud part and into something exhausted and continuous. It found the stairwell. I was at the third floor landing when it caught me. A claw through the gap between the banister posts into my calf, and the pain arrived as heat first, and then as something more specific. And I went down hard with my knee on the edge of a step, and the Glock skidded down two steps and stopped. I kicked at its face with my free boot. The creature's jaw opened wide, past the natural hinge point, working on its direction that did not match the joint. And the child crying came out of it directly against my leg, and then its gums pressed against my boot and the sound shifted and it bit down. I put the Glock against its cheek at close range and fired. The grip released. The creature went back down the stairs, producing a sound I had no category for, and I pulled myself up the remaining steps on my elbows and got onto the third floor. The office at the end of the third floor hall had a window facing Main Street and a door that opened inward. I got a desk across the door, then a filing cabinet on top of the desk, old, half empty, lighter than it looked, then a laser printer braced against the back of the desk for friction. I sat down against the wall beneath the window and looked at my calf. The claw had caught the back muscle through the denim. Three parallel lines, clean-edged, bleeding steadily without spurting. The $12 first aid kit had four bandages and a pair of gloves. I folded two bandages together and held pressure, and I used the gloves as a secondary wrap around the outside of the denim to hold them in place. It was the kind of fix that works for about an hour before it stops working. The office had held most of its contents. A dead Dell monitor at the desk. A cork board with town meeting notices still pinned to it. A paper calendar open at March 2002 and left there. A mug of pens on the desk. Every pen fused in the residue of evaporating coffee, solid in place. A dead ficus in the corner. Soil pulled away from the pot wall and cracked through. Ceiling tiles stained brown above the window, an old leak pattern spreading out from the seam. I tried 911 first. The call connected for 4 seconds and dropped. The second attempt gave me silence. I sent my location to Stephen. His number, my coordinates from the satellite map, a photo of the municipal building exterior, a photo of the Radio Shack front, so we had a landmark. The Texas show delivered. Then the signal dropped and the confirmation disappeared from the screen. The hallway outside the office went quiet. I shifted my weight to check the bandage on my leg and halfway responded. The sound, low and close to the floor, moving from the direction of the stairwell. It stopped when I stopped moving. Every time I shifted my weight, the sound adjusted. Every time I held still, it held still. It was not searching randomly. It was tracking by sound, building a map of every movement I made. And I gave it an enormous amount of material to work with. I stayed as still as I could manage. The creature moved down the hallway and began testing the doors. One at a time, a slow turn of the handle and a release, working from the stairwell end towards my office. The handle on my door turned, the pressure held against the desk for a moment. Then it released, and the creature moved on to the next door. I pulled out my phone and started typing. My cough from earlier in the stairwell. It repeated that. The slide on the Glock being pulled back to check the chamber, which I'd done once at the bottom of the stairs. It produced that sound exactly, the specific metal movement of it. My own voice from the yard. Help! Coming from somewhere near the stairwell landing. Then, directly outside the door, a child crying again. Softer than any version I had heard. The shape of it close enough to the real thing that the error in it almost didn't register on first pass. My phone was at 7% battery and the signal was gone, and I was on the third floor of a building in a town that a county had cleared out in 2002 and never formally named the reason. I kept typing. The battery's at 4%. I am going to be concise. Barron is off a gravel road that branches from County Road 14. The turnoff is unmarked. There is a broken cattle gate pulled open on the left side of the road, and a green mile marker with 14 on it approximately a quarter mile from the turn. My car is a gray Honda CRV parked just inside the gate. The keys are in my jacket pocket. The jacket is on the floor of this office because I used it as a supplement to pressure the bandage before I found the first aid kit. I am on the third floor of the municipal building at the end of Main Street, west-facing office. The building is brick, 3 stories. There is a Radio Shack on Main Street with a Spider-Man poster still inside, a name badge behind the counter that read Steven, and a handheld radio on the counter that I left sitting there.
Third Love makes bras that actually fit, so they know this. If your bra feels uncomfortable, the problem isn't your body, it's your bra. Third Love designs for comfort first. Soft fabrics, support that doesn't dig, pinch, or slip. Bras that feel good and look good under everything you wear. Shop Third Love and explore over 60 sizes, including AA through H, and half cup sizes you won't find anywhere else. Get $15 off your first purchase at thirdlove.com with code PODCAST15.
Normally in these ads, you'd expect someone like me to ask you to buy something. But I want to ask you to do something different. I'm Dave Farenthold, and I'm a reporter for the New York Times. I'm an investigative reporter, which means that I follow the money, inside of government and outside of government. The point of my job is to find things people are trying to hide. It involves talking to lots of people. It involves looking through lots and lots of documents. And if there weren't folks like me to go beyond the surface to understand who is really shaping what the government does, the public will be left in the dark about what the government's doing with your tax money, what the government's doing to you through regulations and spending. If you're like me and you think this kind of journalism is important, seek out a news source that does firsthand, fact-based reporting. If that's the New York Times, thank you. If that's your local paper, that's great too, because where you get your information matters.
The thing in this town uses sounds as a tool. The child crying is bait. It moves to pull you towards it. It repeats sounds it has cataloged. It listens with a patience that doesn't seem to have a limit. If you are reading this on the road and you are approaching because Steven sent you, stay in your car. Windows up. Do not call out. Do not play audio from your phone with the volume on. Do not respond to crying, regardless of how close it sounds. Steven has not replied, which likely means the outgoing message failed on poor signal. He will call someone when I don't return by tomorrow morning. That is the reasonable expectation, and I am keeping it. The thing outside this door is currently using Steven's voice. I want to be precise about the mechanism. Earlier, when I was on the stairwell trying to get signal, I played Steven's last voicemail on speaker to check the connection quality. I played it twice. The voicemail is 12 seconds long, and Steven talks through all of it. The creature was below me on the stairwell when I did that, and it is now outside this office door, and it has his voice. The timing is not coincidental. The printer at the base of the door just moved. I don't know how many of these things are in Barron. I encountered one. I hit it twice, and it kept moving both times. I have one round left in the Glock. The desk just shifted. If you hear a child near an abandoned place, stay in your car. Keep driving. Do not stop to confirm what you are hearing. The door is flexing against the frame in slow pulses now, and Steven is on the other side of it saying my name with the cadence right and everything else wrong, and I type this with one hand because the other is holding the Glock. The printer is on the floor. It knows exactly where I put the desk.